from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. New numbers show that more Americans have health insurance than ever before, thanks to the Affordable Care Act. But that does not mean those covered by Obamacare are all happy with their coverage. Premiums are going up. Out-of-pocket expenses can be high, and it can be difficult to find a doctor who will take your Obamacare insurance. This hour on Point, we're looking at Obamacare's growing pains. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you have insurance through the Affordable Care Act? What's your experience been like? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Before we dive in, let's listen for a moment just to be reminded of the attitude of leading candidates in the presidential race on American healthcare. Bernie Sanders talked about a single-payer system at a town hall meeting in Las Vegas in February.
We are the only country in the industrialized world that doesn't guarantee healthcare to all people. I've been criticized for saying that. Let me say it again. I believe healthcare is a right of all people. I will fight for a Medicare for All single-payer system.
Medicare for all, single-payer system, that would be a new system. Oh, okay, here's Trump talking about Obamacare in New Hampshire in February.
So Obamacare is a disaster. You know, premiums have gone up on Obamacare, 25, 35, and 45%, some even over 50%. And just like you, people have been forced, they've lost everything because of health care. Obamacare is a disaster, and we're going to repeal it, and we're going to replace it with something great.
Disaster, repeal, replace. Hillary Clinton, a different approach. Let's look at it. Let's fix it. Here she was in Derry, New Hampshire, February.
So when President Obama succeeded, I was thrilled. I don't agree with Senator Sanders that we should start over, that we should throw our country into a contentious national debate about health care again. We're at 90% coverage. I'm going to fix what needs to be fixed. We're going to move from 90 to 100, which is a lot easier to get to than starting at zero to get to 100.
Okay, who knows where we'll go? Maybe we'll look at what might need fixing in this hour. Joining me now from Philadelphia, Daniel Polsky, Executive Director of the Leonard David Institute of Health Economics at the University of Health, Pennsylvania. Professor of Medicine at the Perelman School of Medicine, Professor of Healthcare Management at the Wharton School. He was Senior Economist on Healthcare Issues in the President's Council of Economic Affairs, 07 to 08. Daniel Polsky, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from Madison, New Jersey, Gail Walensky, economist, senior fellow at Project HOPE, an international health education foundation. She was administrator of the Healthcare Financing Administration, directing the Medicare and Medicaid program under President George H.W. Bush. Gail Walensky, welcome back to On Point.
Nice to talk to you again, Tom.
It's great to have you here. Dan Polsky, you and others have been looking lately at some of the pains that are emerging here around premiums, around out-of-pocket expenses, around who can get what to care from what doctors. Give us a sense of where the pains are most acutely showing up under Obamacare, Dan.
Well, some of the work that we're doing here has looked at the challenges in finding a doctor who takes your insurance. This is, in many ways, been a challenge for patients who are on Medicaid. Something has always been present, but now that we have Obamacare and plans that are offered through the marketplace, there are more plans that have what we call narrow provider networks. So if you choose a plan on the exchange that happens to have a characteristic of a narrow provider network, it can be more challenging to find a provider that actually takes your insurance. And one of the things that people are hearing about is sometimes you might end up in the hospital with at a hospital that actually takes your insurance, but sometimes the doctors that are serving the patients in that hospital don't take your insurance, and there are some surprise bills, and that's one of the things that regulators have jumped on as something that we'd like to fix on the marketplace.
Let's stick with that for just a second. I mean, you're talking about it there in a tone as though it's sort of a minor thing, but it sounds like it could be a major thing. If I can't find a doctor to give me the service that I need, or if I go to the hospital and then later I have surprise bills, I mean, those can lead, we've heard many stories, to financial ruin.
Really just completely inexcusable. it can lead to you end up in the hospital you think you are taken care of, and you can have bills in excess of $10,000-$20,000. We don't have a good estimate yet of how frequent this happens, but what we do know is when it does happen, it's people speak up loudly, and they should, and it's something that really needs to be fixed.
Gail, can we stick with this one for just a second? The narrow networks available under some levels of Obamacare, or maybe more than some, how widespread do you see this problem being, Gail? And how, if it's a flaw, how deep the flaw, how fixable?
I think it's probably pretty widespread. How serious it is depends on the availability of needed set of medical specialists and primary care physicians reasonably accessible to individuals. It is not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, it's probably absolutely necessary if costs are going to be well controlled for the plan. But there is so narrow that there are not the adequate number of specialists, or that the wait is deemed unreasonable by an independent observer. That's, of course, hard to figure out. It can be handled, but it has to be handled well. What is interesting to me is that most of the expansion in coverage has actually come from Medicaid and not from the exchanges. And while Medicaid traditionally has had issues with regard to adequate access, we're not hearing very much about people who are part of the expanded Medicaid coverage having the kinds of problems that we're hearing about in the exchange. It's not clear whether those are run better, just have had more experience handling the population, or the individuals aren't as noisy about having problems, or whether or not it is fundamentally different in these two markets. But people, we need to understand that more, because that's really where the big expansion in coverage is.
I want to look at that, but Dan, first just on these narrow networks, is that because under Obamacare, some of the highest price providers are excluded or not signing up to participate here? And if that's the case, does that mean Americans are really getting poorer quality health care, or is this just, or is it still okay, but we are learning something about what we can afford here as a country?
Well, I would start from a different place, which is think you're an insurer and you're looking to sell insurance in this marketplace, which is really oriented towards individuals that are somewhere between 150% of the federal poverty level and 400% of the poverty level, so say between family of four, between $30,000 and $100,000. It's a market where individuals really got to stretch their dollar to make their budgets, which is a little bit of a different market in general than a typical employer-sponsored plan. Like I'm here at the University of Pennsylvania, and our typical individual that's trying to be insured has a more stable and secure income.
Though $30,000 to $100,000, that's most Americans. I mean, that's the hugest portion of Americans right there.
It's a huge portion, and absolutely, but it's a set of individuals that are very sensitive to price, and the folks that they are trying to attract are individuals that before Obamacare decided not to get insurance. Because it didn't fit into their budget. So it's an incredibly price-sensitive group. So you want to offer insurance to this group. You want to find a way to offer options that are affordable. So the idea of a narrow network is to constrain the costs of the health plan. And so hopefully on these in most marketplaces that have narrow networks, there are also options for plans that have broader networks. And so individuals who are shopping can choose, do I want a plan that's potentially less expensive and I have to maybe search a little harder for a doctor, or one where I pay a little bit more and have more choice. Now, if the consumers were well informed, that would be a nice option to have. So I would say, in answer to your question, There are options for lower cost narrow network plans, and I think if the system was executed with better information, that this would be an ideal way to present insurance plans to the people who are shopping on the exchanges.
It's interesting. Again, Dan, you sound kind of chipper about it, but is this in effect a kind of downgrading of American expectations on what healthcare means? Maybe that's necessary, but is that what we're looking at here?
I would look at it from the reverse, where the opportunities before healthcare reform for most of these individuals were none. The individual market was not working. They weren't offered insurance to their employer. So I would say for those individuals that were previously uninsured, it's a dramatic upgrading, which I'm actually think is a move in the right direction.
Gail, is a narrow network of providers, does that mean lower quality health care?
Absolutely not. It means that the choice of where you can go or who you can go to is more constrained. But that's really the relevant question, which is there an adequate set of choices in terms of the specialty range of physicians? Are there hospitals in the network that are in reasonable proximity? And as long as the answer is yes to that, having a narrow network is not an issue. Many of the plans like the Kaisers, the integrated delivery systems, have limited physician populations and limited numbers of hospitals that are part of the plan. And people can get very well-coordinated care with good healthcare outcomes.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Obamacare's growing pains, the Affordable Care Act, now under the microscope as it plays out in real life. Dan Polsky is with us, Executive Director of the Leonard Davis Institute of Health Economics at the University of Pennsylvania. Gail Wilensky is with us from Project Hope, joins us today from Madison, New Jersey. You can join us as well. Are you covered by Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act? And how is it actually working for you? Do you feel well covered? Have you been able to find the doctors, the care you want and need? Have you had trouble with that, with narrow networks of providers? And how about the cost? Whole range of responses, lots of criticism, of course, on the campaign trail. This is Brent Brown, has autoimmune disease. In March, he introduced the president at a speech in Milwaukee, said that Obamacare saved his life. Talk to the reporter after the event.
I was on death's doorstep. And then I had my surgeries that I could have because of the ACA, and now I'm here and alive.
And on the other hand, here's Teresa O'Donnell, town hall event in Columbus, Ohio in March, worrying about a huge jump in her premiums. More of that to come later this year. We'll talk about that. She buys insurance through a private broker and said the policies on the exchange were even more expensive.
I voted for Obama, but then my health insurance skyrocketed from $490 a month to $1,081 a month for a family of four. I know Obama told us that we'd be paying a little more, but over doubling my health insurance cost has not been a little more.
20 million more Americans now have health care coverage under Obamacare. How's it actually working? We'll talk with Gail and Dan. We want to hear from you as well. Eli in Derry, New Hampshire. Eli, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Tom, how are you?
Very well. What's your experience?
My experience, I'm a small business owner. Before Obamacare, I couldn't afford to have an insurance for my family. When we got the Obamacare, 4 or 5 months later, my wife was diagnosed with cancer, and we went through the procedure of chemo and hospitals. I believe without Obamacare, we couldn't be on the street. I'm not saying Obamacare is the perfect answer, but I believe as a nation, we should work together as Democrat and Republican. I'm registered Republican. And we work on Obamacare to fix it and make it better. But without health care, and we claim always that we are the greatest nation on earth, and there are some people suffering. They cannot make it to the hospital because of the bills. So I would like to work all together as a nation and fix Obamacare and make it better.
Eli, I'm glad that it brought coverage for your wife, and I appreciate your call. One more right here. Oklahoma City. Robin, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
We have Obamacare. I have my youngest daughter has vascular Ehlers-Danlos, which is a genetic disorder where your body doesn't make or make use of collagen, so okay. Basically she's coming unglued.
Mm-hmm.
Without Obamacare, it is a pre-existing condition, therefore she would never have been covered. Life expectancy with vascular Ehlers-Danlos is 30. That's a pretty grim number.
Yeah.
Luckily, with Obamacare and the coverage that we've gotten, or that she has gotten, we have seen some of the top doctors in the nation, and there have been a couple of them that have found it very difficult to deal with the length of time it takes for the insurance companies to pay them,
mm-hmm.
where a couple of them specifically stated that they were used to being paid within 90 days by the insurance carriers, and now it's at least 120 days.
What level of Obamacare do you have, Robin? You know, there's different levels, different...
We have Silver, and it's
next
Blue Cross
highest.
Blue Shield out
mm-hmm.
of Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
and Silver coverage. It has been, with this level of care, it's been expensive anyway. It would have been absolutely prohibitive, even if we could have gotten coverage for her before Obamacare.
So it's there for your daughter, and we hear that as well, and I'm very glad that it's there for her, and I appreciate your calling, Robin. I want to get some more, if I may. Thank you from Oklahoma City, and one more from Nashville, Tennessee. Daniel, you're on.
Yes, hi, Tom. I live in Nashville, Tennessee, so I have insurance through the Marketplace and through Blue Cross Blue Shield, and I had it for 4 months, and I paid my bill and found out when I called Blue Cross that my plan had been canceled. So I had absolutely no idea, even though I had paid for 4 months. They eventually gave me a refund, which just went to show me that I don't know how I was in the wrong.
So is Obamacare, would you say it's working for you, or what's the main problem?
I'd say it's not working for me, simply because even though I signed up during open enrollment,
yeah.
and even though I paid my bill every month, I technically did not have insurance. Was never informed.
So it was kind of the snafu situation that you're looking at there. Dan Polsky, speak to, if you would, what's coming with premiums. There's a lot of talk about insurance companies not covering their costs in insuring people under Obamacare, and that we're going to see significant hikes coming this year in premiums, maybe right in the run-up to the election. What do you foresee, Dan?
I hear the same reports that you do, and I think that we will see a jump in premiums this year. I'd say that there's a couple of main factors at play. One is that the insurers are realizing that what this market really is like, and I think they predicted they kind of underpriced it the first 2 years, and maybe some of the healthier individuals are not participating in the marketplace right now due to some of the rules changes that have happened along the way. I expect we will see higher prices this year, that'll present some additional challenges to try to expand the number of people covered through the marketplace.
Gail, what kind of increases do you see coming? You've said, I think, that participating insurers are losing, like, I don't know, 10% on their Obamacare coverage.
That's what was reported by McKinsey. They have been willing, for the most part, to stay in during this early period. Of course, this is actually the first year that the plans had any real experience on which to use when they put their premium requests for the next year in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That will be even more true next year. So I think that we need to get a more stable market going for the exchanges. There's a lot of churn in terms of the people who are getting insurance in the exchange. Some of them come in late in special enrollments. They have a higher likelihood to drop out during the course of the year after they've used. We need to see the regulators at the state level working more with the plans to try to help them get to some stability We also need to make sure the transition from Medicaid to the exchanges could work in a more stable way. I think people ought to explore the idea that if you're, for example, in Medicaid and are having a reasonably good experience, narrow access network, but broad benefits, and you are pushed because you are working a little more outside of the income cutoff at 138 of the percent of the poverty line,
mm-hmm.
Maybe being able to use your subsidy from the exchanges to continue in Medicaid as a Medicaid buy-in or vice versa. Because we also have this problem that people in that crossover area of income are going to get pushed out of one system, the exchanges, into another Medicaid or vice versa. And so trying to smooth out these issues really needs to start happening. The growing pains are not surprising. We need to try to fix some of these problems as we see them. Some of it, of course, was being induced by state regulators who pushed very hard the first year or two to get premiums very low for good reasons. But obviously, for many plans, they were below their cost. That is not a long-term stable environment. You can't expect that they are going to not be able to cover the costs of running these plans.
If the costs go up, where does that put them? Will they be on a par with what people pay under employer-sponsored health care plans? Will they be still less? Will they be more?
They don't. It really depends a lot on the networks. The requirements for the essential benefit plan are broader than most of the traditional employer health plans have been. Some of them are still grandfathered in. There's some expensive benefits that must be included. It's why the narrow networks have become such a common feature, is that if you can't discriminate, shouldn't discriminate, on the basis of expected use, you have a broad benefit package that you must provide by law. The most obvious way to try to get your arms around all of this is to have a narrow, tight network. I think it's important to try to understand better why has the Medicaid expansion seemed to be less bumpy than the exchange expansion. It's not obvious that the people are that on the new Medicaid population that's being brought in should be any healthier than those who are a little more income and who were working basically before. So I think we need to learn from the what's working portion, as well as to try to fix some of the bumps that you hear about because people are unhappy with either lack of availability of specialists or higher costs than they anticipated. Mm. Sometimes people just don't know that if you get a silver plan, you get cost-sharing protection. You don't get if you pick a different metal level. Some people are not probably choosing the best plan for their likely needs. Helping people understand the options is also very important. This is not a group that may have much experience buying insurance.
Bronze, silver, gold, platinum, and it can make a big difference in what it's ultimately going to cost you. Of course, it costs you as soon as you sign up, and it costs you more the higher up those color rankings you go.
It depends on your income because for many people, most of the people in the exchanges are being heavily subsidized. That doesn't mean fully subsidized, but heavily subsidized. Most of the people who would have to pay very much are not coming in to the exchanges. But it still means being very careful to look at what you're going to have to pay and what you get for your money. Sometimes people only look at the premiums. And they forget to look at how much they're going to owe if and when they actually use health care services under the insured plan.
Donald Trump says scrap it. Bernie Sanders says let's have Medicare for all. Hillary Clinton says let's fix it. Julie in Wilmington, Ohio. Julie, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My husband and I are self-employed, and we have been on Obamacare for 3 years, mm-hmm. and it has been terrible. Our experience has been very, very bad. This past year was the worst. We met with a healthcare navigator to try to find a plan with a lower premium that would still offer coverage with doctors in our area.
Yeah.
We finally found a plan and signed up and paid the first month. And we had actually called my doctor to verify that she was a provider with the tax ID number, the address, the name of the doctor.
Okay.
Anthem verified that she was a provider, and her name was listed on the healthcare.gov website as a provider for this plan, and she was also listed on the insurance website. Turns out she was not a provider. It was the insurance company's mistake. And after I made a claim for a minor surgery, I was told I would have to pay everything. It didn't matter. There was no accountability for the insurance company.
That's pretty infuriating.
Yeah, three incredible, stressful months. We filed an appeal. It was denied. The doctor finally filed an appeal on behalf of all of her patients who had this plan, and that was paid. But now I have no coverage with this doctor, and I can't find a doctor in our area.
Dan, weigh in on Julie's case there. Again, it sounds like a bureaucratic problem, but one with very real consequences for her if there's a misunderstanding or miscommunication about who's actually, you know, if you're going to be covered or not. Why should that happen? And what about the narrowness that she's up against feeling there, Dan?
Well, first, Julie, just so sorry to hear what you're going through. It really is, inexcusable in terms of the way that plan is being implemented. I wish I had, that there was a quick fix that would make it all better. The only thing I will say is these are problems, especially in the individual insurance market, which is a really small slice of the pie of who gets insured. You know, it's mostly for self-employed and, individuals like Julie, but also people who now have access who didn't have access before. But it's a real small slice of the pie, and a lot of these are issues that have happened, that existed before Obamacare. And if this
it
is
hardly
a light,
matters to Julie if it's a small hardly, slice of the pie. It's her life. It's her pocketbook. It's her family's finances.
Completely inexcusable. And the only thing I could say going forward is that now that the government, I'd say, is responsible for what happens in this marketplace because of Obamacare, that there's more attention at the federal level to creating regulations that can hold insurers responsible. And this is happening within the states that are part of healthcare.gov. There's new regulations being written that insurers will have to be responsible for the quality of the lists. And this is the first time it's ever happened. The lists of which doctors are in network and out of network have always been terrible. And no one's been held accountable for that. And that's going to start to change. And some of that is a result of Obamacare, but it doesn't help Julie, which is really, those types of stories, we should not be hearing them. It's just inexcusable.
Gail, we look at the reports about VA coverage, the Veterans Administration, and all the scandal and woe that's there. Is Obamacare proving that the government can do it better when it's actually in partnership here with private insurers or not?
Well, traditionally, that's what the government outside of the VA does. I mean, that's basically Medicare. There's some irony that Bernie Sanders keeps talking about Medicare for all as though our Medicare is a single-payer system with broad benefits, no co-pays and no deductibles. It's absolutely not that. The experience over the years in terms of Medicare working with private insurers, which is how Medicare is provided, or now sometimes having people choose a private plan, Medicare Advantage, coordinated care plan, has by and large worked pretty well. So it is an area where the government has had generally positive results. They've been more aggressive in terms of making available health outcome information and trying to provide quality metrics about hospitals and now about groups of physicians and nursing homes to help people who want to look to see what they're buying. Medicare.gov actually is very supportive when people are picking a drug plan. They can put in what they use, and you will get online information about what plan in your neighborhood makes the most sense for you to buy in terms of the drugs that you're taking. So historically, that has worked quite well. The irony with the VA is that there was a period a decade or so ago when people were saying, this is our model for the future. Why can't we be like the VA? VA's had good periods. The VA is going through what has been a very painful, embarrassing situation.
Gail, hold it there. We have to take a short break right here. Sorry about that. Right up against the clock. We're talking about Obamacare's growing pains. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about Obamacare's growing pains, the Affordable Care Act, now under the microscope as it plays out in real life. Gail Walensky is with us from Project Hope. Dan Polsky is with us from the University of Pennsylvania. You can join us as well. Are you covered by Obamacare? Have you been able to find the doctors, the care you want and need? And what about the cost, the premiums, the out-of-pocket costs? How's it working for you? Are you in the scrap-it camp, in the fix-it camp, in the pretty darn good camp? A lot of people responding online here. Kathleen says, Obamacare was a godsend for me. Stacy says, I have access to health care that is treating chronic autoimmune issues for the first time. So grateful to Obama. Aaron says, Obamacare is dehumanizing health care. It's turned into conveyor belt treatment now. And Dwight writes to us on Facebook, the ACA was a giveaway to the insurance industry. Of course, it's all unraveling. Dan, we hear that charge that it's unraveling from conservative critics of this. You know, you see, can find headlines out there about an Obamacare death spiral. Whatever the failings at the moment, does it look like it's stable to you? Is this going to go forward? I mean, if it's President Donald Trump, I don't know what will happen. If it's President Bernie Sanders, he says he's going in a different direction. If we have a next president who's generally supportive, does the structure hold up?
I mean, from my point of view, I see that the ACA is very stable. It's going through growing pains, and there are things that need to be fixed. Gail's list of things that need to be fixed, I think, is right on point. I would say that these are things that should be viewed as part of a startup, part of learning as you go. Clearly, there are people who are part of that startup and are in the middle of it that are facing a lot of painful adjustments along the way. And it's an unfortunate cost of kind of starting up something new. But to scrap it and start with a completely new design would also have its share of pain as people undergo the change. Any change will involve winners and losers, and people who feel the brunt of the change. But that doesn't mean we should undergo a completely new system. I think it's nice to see and hear these stories of people who have benefited from Obamacare, and it's really painful to hear the stories of people who have been hurt by the changes. But I think we're moving in the right direction, and there's more that can be done.
Gail Walensky, how about it? I'm reading that just this morning, Marcia Engel, she was editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine. She's on the faculty now at Harvard Medical School. And she's saying, this reform isn't sufficient. Yes, we've covered 20 million more people, but there's still 30 million uncovered. And our costs are still out of control. We spend more than anybody else. We don't have the greatest results. Spending per person on health care went down for a little while under Obamacare recession years, but now it's up again, and she's saying ultimately we're going to have to get private insurers and the profit-oriented provider system out of our health care, or it just doesn't work as it should. What do you say, Gail?
We are making progress in a good direction in terms of expanding coverage. That's very important for the people and for the communities where they live. I think it's unlikely we are going to scrap what we have and start it again. Very likely they have a split government control. That is not one party controlling both houses of Congress and the presidency, and even more unlikely that we would have a supermajority as President Obama did for his first 2 years. That will mean people are going to have to work together, and it's the Congress that changes the legislation, not the president, although the president can obviously propose it.
Are you going to have enough health insurers staying in the system for it to work? I mean, you've got some who are checking out.
I believe the answer is yes, but the churn problem and the stability is an issue. And the next administration is going to need to have some serious effort to try to reduce that churn. There are things that can be done. And again, to me, the most interesting is the churn we're seeing in the exchanges is not being observed in the expanded Medicaid population that's being covered, which is even bigger. There are some reasons for that. We don't have to go into it now. The administration will need to look at what can be done to try to reduce that churn. That is unstable for a market.
When you say churn, you mean Americans who are covered, what, getting in to Obamacare and then getting out?
Right, and not going into other coverage. If they go into other coverage, that's fine. The other kind of churn is people who are moving plans because of the premium changes that were unexpected. Some of that is good and healthy, but you want to try to have more stable pricing so that you don't have that. What happened between the first and second year is a lot of people went to the cheapest plans, not surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Those plans had underpriced. When people came to sign up the next year, there was a big movement away from the plans that had gotten most of the enrollees because it turned out they were way underpriced. That kind of churn also destabilizes insurance markets. Regulators have to be smarter than thinking lowest cost this year is always the best place for a plan to be.
What about out-of-pocket expenses? It really matters whether you're in the bronze coverage or silver or gold or platinum. I mean, as I understand it, if it's bronze, insurance, Obamacare will cover 60% of a lot of things, all the way up to 90% at platinum. But that can leave a lot of out-of-pocket expense. How is that hitting people, Gail?
Well, that's also the people need to understand if they pick a silver plan, that's where the cost-sharing protection comes in. None of the other levels have that cost-sharing. They also need to look at what kind of coverage that they're getting for their lower premium. There may be some plans that have quite tight networks, but if they don't expose the family to as many co-payments or deductibles, that may mean a much better plan. Again, people tend to focus just on the premium, but that's not what defines the benefit that they're buying. And if they need some help, we need to make sure that they get them through the navigators and other people who can help people who haven't had experience here.
Virginia in Texas, Dripping Springs, Texas. Hi, Virginia. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I totally disagree with what's going on with Obamacare. We were on Obamacare for 6 months. We found it more cost-effective, both in premiums and co-payments, to get out of Obamacare and get a third job, both my husband and myself, to get private insurance through the employer because it was a better financial thing for our family. And when you have a situation where you cannot get to doctors because the specialists that are not there, and it takes a four-hour drive to get to one of these, this is totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable.
Virginia, so you found that it was more expensive to be on Obamacare than what, just keep looking for a job that would give you employee-sponsored health care?
Yes.
Dan, what do you make of that story?
I agree. Employer insurance is typically a stronger health plan, and it's depending on the employer. If it's a large employer, one can get either better coverage or have more help with paying that coverage.
Yep.
And I think in many ways to keep the employer market from shrinking, having that be a market where that's very robust and stays robust is good for the system. But hearing about the four-hour drive to see a specialist, I would agree completely that's completely unacceptable.
I mean, Gail, you say that narrow network doesn't mean poor quality coverage, but a four-hour drive has to be calculated in there somehow. That's a factor in itself.
Well, it is not necessarily the narrowness of the network that causes the four-hour drive. I agree, yeah. A four-hour drive to get to a specialist is not acceptable. Again, people who are members of integrated delivery systems like the Kaisers and Geisingers and Intermountain Healthcare typically have narrow networks of very capable physicians and other clinicians that cross the spectrum. It's how long does it take to get to a physician that could provide the care you need, not necessarily your first choice, but one who is qualified to provide the care you need. That has to be at an acceptable level, or it's not. It's not there. Now, you have to remember that the Affordable Care Act was put in place for people who don't have employer-sponsored insurance available to them. They're typically people who work in retail industries or who are self-employed. It is rarely going to be the case that you will be better off unless you're at a crossover income where you're getting a very big subsidy under the Affordable Care Act. Always be better off with employer-sponsored.
Is this second-class patient label that some are talking about here justified, to your mind, Gail, for those covered by Obamacare?
It's way too broad a term to use. There are good networks that are being put up. That is the relevant question that ought to be answered based on patient outcomes and the availability of an appropriate array of clinicians in the network. It's easy to make that charge. Let's see the empirical data that's justifying it.
Monique in Owensboro, Kentucky. Monique, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay.
Living in Kentucky, we were a state that really was hard to get insurers in here because we have a very sick population, smokers, obesity, so forth and so on. Mm. As long as I was employed, I had insurance. When I quit my job or I retired, I went on COBRA. Everything fine and dandy. Got off of COBRA, was really not expecting to be denied by private insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Was denied because as a healthy 50-year-old that exercises, I took cholesterol medicine to keep it down.
Yep.
And I took an antidepressant. Okay.
Okay.
So I was denied because of that. So in Kentucky, fortunately, we had a high-risk pool insurance for cancer, for chronic diseases, for very expensive. So I was able to get coverage there, which I chose to do because I can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
I went from paying, let's see, $807 a month for just myself. And when Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, came through, I was able to get not similar coverage, but coverage for $507. Now, yes, it's a lot. I'm fortunate I can afford it.
Yeah.
But as long as we keep insurance, unregulated health insurance companies, as our first and foremost priority, this will never work. Number two, in my opinion, a lot of people, and I hate to generalize, go to medical school so they can make a good living, a really good living, a really, really good living. Hard work, I don't deny it. It has also become a, you go in 5 minutes, you go in five minutes.
Yep.
It was like that before in my area. It was like that before. We have minimal doctors here. It's a very small community. So the expectation to go in, make a lot of money, insurance companies make a lot of money. How in the world are we supposed to take care of the people, which our country depends on healthy people?
Monique, we've got it. My time is short, but I think we've got exactly what you're saying there. I mean, Gail, when you look, it's not as if we had a perfect world before. We had high costs. We had many uncovered people. Now we have more covered people, but we still got issues here. We're hearing them in this hour. If Hillary Clinton, let's say, is the one steering next and she wants to fix it, what do you think that would mean, Gail? And if it's one of the others, Bernie or Donald Trump, do you see a way to just walk away from this?
What Hillary Clinton's going to want to do is find out what the federal government can do to help reduce this churn that's going on in the exchange, that is both people coming in and dropping out, and insurers not being able to cover their costs, sit down, convene a group, see what they can propose administratively or legislatively to try to reduce the problem, try to make the transitions between Medicaid and the exchanges work better. These are all kinds of the issues that you might expect during the first few years of a major expansion. if people are interested in trying to get a healthier country, as we talk frequently, going after what are called the social determinants of health, some of the non-medical aspects are very important. But going after obesity, which is our new smoking, as the threat to American health, would be really critical. It will require a multi-pronged area. If it's Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump, they are going to find out that only Congress gets to pass legislation. And so it really depends on what 218 in the House and 50 or 51 in the Senate, depending on where the vice president sits relative to this, are willing to consider, or 60 if there's not a willingness to have a bipartisan package put together, and that it's easier to propose when you're on the outside than it is to actually pass legislation. So a long time getting to the expanded coverage we've seen. I would be surprised if it is blown up so we can start again. That's not our history.
Dan Polsky, we've just got a minute here. Marcia Engel writes that the number one reason that we have the most expensive health system in the world is what she calls spectacularly inefficient private insurance industry. You just heard Monique say, as long as that's the frame through which we bring health care, we're in trouble. Can we work with those companies, the for-profit companies, and make this work as it ought to for Americans, Dan?
I think one of the reasons we have the most expensive, we spend the most on healthcare compared to other countries is mostly related to the prices we pay for healthcare. We haven't seen in the evidence that the profits of insurance companies are really driving these differences. But really, I think I hear the music.
2% so. Overhead for Medicare, 20% for the private companies. That's a pretty big spread.
Yes, but the growth is really connected to prices and having more competition in the marketplace.
This debate's going to go on right through this campaign season. I hope you're informed by this conversation as we head there. Higher premiums, we're told, coming. Many more people covered, but nothing like nirvana here on the healthcare front. Dan Polsky at the Leonard Davis Institute of Health Economics, University of Pennsylvania. Thanks very much for being with us today, Dan.
Thanks a lot, Tom. I enjoyed it.
And Gail Walensky at Project Hope. Thanks for joining us, Gail.
My pleasure. More to come.
More to come. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.